Now, first of all, with regards to the general subject matter, of Buddhism and of psychoanalysis, with what are these disciplines concerned? This is the first question that we must tackle. Now, Buddhism and psychoanalysis are both concerned with man. It might seem an obvious statement, but it's very important, and the point needs to be made that Buddhism and psychoanalysis are both concerned with man himself. In other words, they are both what we call humanistic. They are man-centered. They are not God-centered, either of them. Neither Buddhism nor psychoanalysis is concerned with God, with any form of supreme being, except quite empirically as a psychic image. So this is the first point that we must stress, that Buddhism and psychoanalysis are both humanistic. For this reason, it's sometimes doubted whether Buddhism is a religion at all. If you read books about comparative religion written by Christian ministers, for instance, or missionaries, sometimes they say, well, Buddhism is a very decent sort of system. It teaches you to be good and not to kill and not to steal, but it isn't really a religion. Or certainly they say it's not a religion of the highest type. Now, whether one defines Buddhism as a religion or not depends, of course, in turn on how widely one defines, or how narrowly one defines, the word religion. If you define religion as meaning belief in God, worship of a supreme being, then obviously Buddhism is cut out. But if you define religion more broadly as any sort of system, any way of life, which takes into account the existence of something transcending the senses and the mind, some ultimate spiritual reality behind the universe, and informing the universe, filling the universe, if you like, then Buddhism is a religion in this broader sense. Now, nowadays, of course, there is the tendency to broaden the meaning of the word religion, to use it in a wider and wider sense. And people are beginning to recognize that, broadly speaking, there are two major kinds of religion in the world. And what we may call the theistic and what we may call the non-theistic. There are all those systems which posit the existence of God, a personal God, a supreme being, a creator. These are called theistic religions. That is to say, all the Semitic religions, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, and then some forms of popular Hinduism, and so on. But on the other hand, one has a number of very important religions which are non-theistic, which get along quite well without the concept, without the idea of a personal God, a supreme being, a creator and governor of the universe. And in this group of religions, you've got the more philosophical forms of Hinduism, like the Vedanta. You have the religions of China, that is to say, Taoism and Confucianism, the religion of Japan, the indigenous religion, Shinto. And also you have in this group, in this category, Buddhism itself. So it's very important for us to realize this, that religion is not necessarily theistic. In this country, we've been brought up to think that religion is necessarily theistic. Religion means belief in God. Practice of religion means going to church and worshipping God on Sunday, if not on the other days of the week, at least on Sunday. But until very recently, people were not aware of the fact that there was such a thing as non-theistic religion. A religion which was complete in every way, but which had no belief in a personal God, a supreme being. Now, in modern times, quite recently, even within the sphere of Christianity, some quite extraordinary developments have been taking place. People have been talking about religionless Christianity, for instance. And they've also been talking about Christianity without God, a sort of non-theistic Christianity, centered more upon Christ than upon God. And this sort of idea, this sort of outlook, as some of you no doubt know, is associated with the name of the Bishop of Woolwich. He seems to believe that the traditional Christian concept of God is finished, it must be got rid of, and he suggests that we replace it with the idea, with the concept of the ground of being, which has a quite sort of oriental and Buddhistic ring, we may say. In fact, I can't help feeling that through his concept of a sort of non-theistic Christianity, the Bishop of Woolwich is moving, whether he knows it or not, really in the direction of Buddhism. And no doubt, being a modern man and a modern mind, he has been influenced to some extent by psychoanalysis. And Freud has tried to show that the traditional conceptual image of God is really a sort of father figure. What do we mean by this? When we are born, when we are infants, we're completely helpless. We don't recollect this stage, so often we tend to overlook it, that when we are born, the human infant, for quite a long time, for several years, is completely helpless, cannot do anything for itself. It has to be fed, it has to be clothed, has to have its nappies changed and all that sort of thing. Everything done for it has to be carried about until it can crawl at least. So it's in a condition, a state of complete helplessness and dependency. There's only one thing that the infant can do, which it usually does very well. And what's that? It can cry at the top of its lungs, as it were. It can certainly cry. So if it wants anything done, if it feels cold and wants warmth, it cries. If it feels hungry, it cries. If it feels afraid, it cries. If it feels angry, it cries very loudly indeed. So this is the only thing that the infant can do. When it gets into difficulties, when it wants something, it just cries. Now, the infant, of course, grows up, becomes a child, becomes a man or a woman. And as this person grows up, it begins to encounter all sorts of difficulties in living, dealing with other people, and so on. Now, sometimes the person concerned, the man or the woman, may succeed in coping, but only too often it happens, for one reason or other, the person can't cope. Something goes wrong. The person doesn't know what to do. It wants to do something, but can't succeed, can't manage on its own. So very often, what happens, according to Freud, is that the grown-up person, in desperation, as it were, unconsciously regresses to an infantile attitude. Just as the child has a sort of omnipotent mother or father who can do anything you want. If only you cry, only you let out a loud enough yell, mummy or daddy will come running and do whatever you want done. So when an adult person gets into difficulties, there's a tendency, according to Freud, to regress through this infantile attitude. So the adult person, the grown-up person, imagines this as a sort of all-powerful figure, someone who can do it all for you when you can't do it yourself. So when the person gets into difficulties, instead of just letting out a yell as the infant does, the adult person, the grown-up person, prays for help. Please do it for me. This is essentially what ordinary prayer is. Please do it for me. I can't do it for myself. Just as the infant lets out its wail, which means, I can't do it for me, please do it for me. So in the same way, the adult man regresses, imagines a personal God, an omnipotent being, and prays, cries out just as the child does. Take, for instance, the case of the savage, the uncivilized man in early times, who was unable, for instance, to control the rainfall. If you are dependent for your actual existence, your subsistence, on the success of the crops, then rainfall is a very, very important matter to you. I've seen this in India. I mean, we don't realize it. We don't even bother whether it rains or not. To us, rain is just a nuisance. It's something which gets in the way of going out for a nice afternoon's walk. But in early times, it wasn't like that. Man's life, man's living, depended upon that rainfall. And sometimes the rain didn't fall. Sometimes primitive man had ploughed his land, he had planted his seeds, and everything was coming up nicely when no rain. Only the sun, as you see it in India, quite pitilessly, mercilessly, as it were, shining all day, and the crop gradually drying up, gradually withering, and man can do nothing. Primitive man, before, say, irrigation was thought of, before water storage was thought of, could do nothing. He felt completely helpless. So what did he do? He regressed. And he started, as it were, praying for rain. God, please give me rain. I've seen this myself in India and in Nepal. I remember when I was in Nepal about 20 years ago, I was staying in a little village just over the border into Nepal, and one day, round the bazaar, I saw a terrific procession going, led by the governor of the locality, the magistrates, the police, a few soldiers, the merchants, all the local population, with images of gods and goddesses, all going round, and they were shouting out, Mahadev Pani Do, Mahadev Pani Do, which means, O great God, give rain. O great God, give rain. And I asked, well, what is it that they're doing? And I was told, they are praying for rain. We haven't had any rain for a long time. The crops are all withering. We are praying for rain. So this is the sort of thing which goes on. And probably, I suspect, if you went into the depths of the countryside in this country, in summer, you might, in some village churches, hear people, hear the parson, praying to God for rain. Now, you may, in a way, smile at this, may think that this sort of picture which I've given, which I've presented, is a sort of caricature of what goes on. You might even think that, in insisting upon this point, we're sort of flogging a dead horse, as though really people don't behave in this way any longer. They don't regress in this way any longer. But the question which arises is, well, do they? Is it correct to say that people don't regress in this way anymore? Has modern civilization entirely wiped out this sort of attitude? But if we think a bit, if we reflect, we realize it's still a very human tendency that when you get into difficulties, you pray for someone to remove those difficulties for you. I remember during the war in this country, whenever things were a bit sticky, what would happen? A day of national prayer would be ordered, and you'd pray to God for victory. But basically, it is the same sort of attitude. And far from being just an occasional occurrence here and there, this was a sort of official policy. The edict went forth, as it were, either from the crown or the government, that such and such day would be a day of national prayer, and you'd pray for victory on that day. In other words, a pure and simple regression to an infantile attitude. Of course, some of the Germans and others, they were praying too. This only goes to expose the absurdity of the whole procedure. Now, according to psychoanalysis, this sort of thing is clearly an example of sort of mass regression to infantile attitudes and to be discouraged. Now, such regressions are not uncommon, not only in time of war, but really at any time.